Welcome back, and now, as I said in the previous presentation, we want you to have the balance sheet and the income statement available. Print them out. Make sure you can find them very readily. If you have them on the screen, then make sure you have a place where you can pause the presentation and the like, because you're going to have to stop, look them up, do the calculation. Okay, let's get started. Slide number 20. The first group of financial ratios we'll take a look at today are the profitability ratios. These are financial ratios that measure a firm's returns by relating profits to sales, profits to assets, profits to equity. So we're going to take a look at the net profit margin, gross margin, operating margin, return on assets, and return on equity. The profitability ratios allow one to measure the ability of a firm to earn an adequate return on their sales, an adequate return on their assets, and on their invested capital. Slide number 21. The first one is the net profit margin, also called the after-tax profit margin. Okay, but you'll just say profit margins. The rate of profit being earned from earnings after expenses and taxes. Now, in Chapter 5, I asked you to do the earnings calls. Well, some of the things that they said you didn't understand, such as the profit margins and the SA&O, sales, administrative, and operating expenses. And they just assume that you understand all these, right? So that's part of the reason we're also going through all this stuff. And they also talked about the bottom line earnings and the top line earnings. Well, guess what? Here is where those things come into play. Because the net income is often called the bottom line. Why? Because if you look at the income statement, it will be the bottom line. It's called sometimes net profits after taxes or net income. And total revenue is the top line. That's the amount of money that's coming in the door. So they'll say top line growth. They're meaning how fast are the sales growing. See, now you're starting to get the jargon. I know it's difficult. The more accounting you know and the more you are exposed to it, you start to understand the jargon. But when you first did those earnings calls, you went, what is he talking about? It takes a while. So let's take a look at the net profit margin for Caterpillar. Do you have the balance sheet? Do you have the income statement? Well, actually, we need the income statement for this one. And you could look these up using Yahoo or Bloomberg or whatever, but I've already put them up on the class website. So we look at the income statement, we'll see for Caterpillar that as of December 31st, 2014, their top line number, the total revenue, is $55,184. Do you see that? Now I got my cheat sheets out. I've already printed them out, and I have my cheat sheets to do the calculations. I've already done the calculations because I'm not so good at calculations, folks, so it's good for me to have those things ready for me. Did you see it? 55,184, and then there are three zeros, and then there are another three zeros. Exactly. This, if you look in the upper right-hand corner, you see it says all numbers in thousands. So what is this saying? This is saying that Caterpillar they sold $55 billion, $184 million worth of equipment. And then at the bottom line, the net income is the $3,695,000,000. Now, what do you have to put all the zeros in there? No, just get rid of all the zeros. And what I would do is I would, for the top line number, take 55,184, and then for the bottom line number, the net income, 3695. So you take 3695 divided by 55,184, and let's make sure I got 6.7%, 0.067. You got it? Okay, is that what you got? Make sure. I'll wait. Okay. Now, is that good? Is that bad? I don't know. We have to look at Caterpillar's competitors. We have to see what other companies in that industry are doing. And then look at the market as a whole for profit margin. For a company like Caterpillar, personally, I think 6.7% is pretty darn good, folks. Because they build, you know, very old economy type companies, you know, old technology products. I don't know, maybe tractors have gotten really high tech with all kinds of gizmos and gadgets that do stuff for you. But for the most part, they got to pick that mountain and move it over there, right? They got to pick up that dirt and move it over there. And that's what Caterpillar makes. So you have to look at their competitors. And who are their competitors? Well, you may know, you may not. I mean, I'm not that familiar with the earth-moving equipment companies, but I'm sure that there are many out there, like John Deere. I think they're more tractors, right, aren't they? And then International Harvester, but they're more trucks. And then there's Komatsu, I'm not sure. But if you go onto Yahoo and click the company's competitors, or, you know, whatever company, whatever internet service you use, or go to the value line and take a look at what the value line says about their competitors and how the profit margins are doing. See, we have to look at the company and its competitors and then, you know, compare and contrast. Slide number 22 is similar to the net profit margin, but it's the gross margin. Gross, doesn't that sound horrible? Well, look at the income statement. That doesn't do with gross things like bugs and worms and things. Gross profit, if you look at the income statement, is what's left over after you have paid how much it costs to produce what you sold. It's called cost of goods sold or cost of revenue. On the balance sheet in Yahoo, it says cost of revenue. So that's what they use. But other, you might, if you've taken accounting, you might have heard of it called cost of goods sold. And so it cost Caterpillar $40 billion, $391 million to produce that $185.184 billion of goods and services that they sold. So the what's left over, you should see $14,793, right? Is that what you find? Make sure. If you don't, we're looking at December 31st, 2014, and they also show you 2013 and 2012, and from that you can look at the growth in these things, and that's other parts of Chapter 17. If you want to do that, you go right ahead and do that on your own. So their gross profit is $14,793. So we do the same thing. You take $14,793 and divide it by the top line number, the total revenue, $55,184, and I got 26.81%, which seems pretty high, but we'd have to compare it to their competitors and see if that's in line or something out of whack. Okay? Good. So you're getting the hang of it. They're really easy, folks. Once you've done a few of them, they're not that hard. And so the next one is going to look very simple, similar. Operating margin. Well, what's operating margin? Well, it's just another measure, right? If you go down the income statement, you will see research and development. Well, they paid over $2 billion to research because they're always, you know, coming out with new products. And then there's the SG&O or SG&A, SG&O, oftentimes you hear it, SG&A. Do you remember the Chapter 5, the guys in the blue suits? Well, you didn't see them. You heard them talking about SG&A or SG&O. There they are, selling, general, and administrative expenses, right? Somebody looked up SG&O and thought it was SE&O. That's the search engine optimization. That's okay. Good. I'm glad you did that. I'm glad you really, you know, it's not important, the information. You're going to get that eventually when you talk to the right person and you go, that's what they're talking about. It's the process. It's the sheer joy of trying to figure it out. And so the operating expenses, they don't total it up. It's very strange. They don't put the total there, but they do come up with the right number. The operating income after reducing the operating expenses is $5,328,000,000. So that's what's left over after you not only have paid for the cost of goods services, you've also paid for any operating expenses, you know, overhead, research and development. And I took 5,328 and divided by the same top line number, 55,184, and got an operating margin of 9.65%. Now, if you go to Yahoo, this is interesting. You go to Yahoo, it's a little different. Now, I don't know why, because the net profit margin was exactly the same, 6.72%. But if you go to Yahoo's on their key statistics, they show 10.5%. This is what you're up against, folks. I would tend to believe Yahoo more than I would believe my own numbers, but at the same time, I know that sometimes in Yahoo and Bloomberg and the others, the numbers look funny. There's something not right. And so what do you have to do? I trust the value line more than I trust anybody else. Or you go to the company's website and say, give me that number, right? Give me that. Because on the company's website will be their financial statements. So I would trust them more than I would trust Yahoo. You make sense? But it's still very similar. 10.5, 6.5, 10, I mean 9.65 and 10.5, they're very close to one another. And you'll also see TTM. TTM, what does that stand for? Trailing 12 months. So what Yahoo and the other services are going to do is they're not going to go back to the previous fiscal year. They're going to go back 12 months. So they're going to look at the last four quarters. Well, in this case, the year end was the December 31st. So we're looking at the fiscal year. If you were to look at the quarterly data, it would be the same because they go back 12 months, but the yearly data goes back 12 months. So that should be the same. Make sense? Okay, let's read together at the bottom of slide 23. The higher the better. Yep, you guessed it. And it varies greatly from industry to industry. So when we are looking at a specific company, we always need to look at its competitors within industry. I think I said that already, right? When we find a company that is atypical of its competitors in the industry, it's not a signal that we should buy it or sell it or whatever. It's a signal that we have more investigative work to do to understand why this company is atypical from the industry. Good. Slide 24. Now, the next two, return on assets and return on equity, are measures of the profitability relative to the assets, relative to the equity. So you're going to need not only the net income from the income statement, but you also need to look at the balance sheet. So find total assets, and the next one is total stockholders equity. We'll do that next one. But right now on slide 24, we're doing a return on assets. So we take that net income, that bottom line number, and we divide it by how much assets the company has at its disposal. Total assets on the balance sheet. Now, we know that net income number. You know what that is, right? 3,695, right? 3,695,000,000. Well, can you find total assets on the balance sheet? I'll wait. I got 84,681. Did you find it? Make sure you found it, folks, because, you know, you got to do this. You got to do it. It's fun. Keep telling yourself that. I think it's fun. All right. So if you do that calculation, dividing the 3,698 divided by the 84,681, you get 4.36. Return on assets of 4.36. Now, the return on Yahoo says 4.28. So they're very similar, but I don't know why they're not the same. I don't know. I'm not going to spend a lot of time trying to figure it out. Unless I were really going to go out and buy Caterpillar. Then I would get the real number and compare it to the real numbers of their competitors. And as we said, it's, okay, let's read together. Return on assets looks at the amount of resources the company needs to support their operations. And it reveals how effective the company is in generating profits from the assets it has available. The higher the number, the better in general, but we have to look at their competitors. And 4% might not sound like a lot, but when you're in a very industrialized company such as Caterpillar, where you need huge capital expenditures, you need factories and distribution networks, and it's a huge operation. 4% doesn't sound too bad. Exactly. Because of what it cost us to produce. Go ahead. Try to build a bulldozer in your backyard. See how successful you are. Slide number 25. How about the return on equity, ROE, or sometimes called return on investment? This one is very popular because it looks at how much it takes us to, how much of our own equity that we used to produce that net income. Right? It's a measure of the overall profitability of a company in relation to how much of the company is owned by the shareholders' equity. A very simple calculation. Again, you take that bottom line number, the net income, 3695, and divide it by the total stockholders' equity. And did you find that on the balance sheet? I got 16746. Is that what you got? I'll wait. Okay. Now, let's read together. Because return on equity uses stockholders' equity instead of the total assets for the denominator, return on equity is very sensitive to the amount of debt a company is carrying. Specifically, if a company carries a great amount of debt, the return on equity will be much larger than the return on assets. And here is the saying you will hear people say in the industry. You're using other people's money to make your money. Now, some investors think this is good, right? Because, exactly, I'm using the bank's money or the bondholder's money, the bond investor's money to produce my goods and services and to return my, to give me a return. Where others are worried about the possible negative consequences of too much debt. And there's that eternal tug of war. You know, we need a lot of capital, especially in a company like Caterpillar, to produce these goods and services. So we're going to need a lot of debt. But at the same time, that debt can come back to kill us if we can't service that debt. So some more aggressive investors will say, no, load up on debt and give us a great return on equity. And other investors will say, no, I like a very liquid balance sheet. That's what the word they use. Meaning liquid, meaning there's not a whole lot of debt, and they can they don't have to worry about paying off all those debts. And if you do this, you'll notice that the total debt for Caterpillar is pretty high, and the equity is fairly low relative to the total assets, and so you get a return on equity of 22%. Did you get that? 22.06? Well, if you take the net income, 3695, divided by the 16746 of total stockholders' equity, did you find that number? That gives you 22%, which is much higher than return on assets. This is typical with highly capital-intensive, they're called, very industrialized companies that need a ton of money to support their operation, to build those factories and plants. Indeed. Now, if you look at the key statistics link, Yahoo reports it at 19.68. So we've got about 3 percentage point difference there. Not quite 2.5 percentage point difference, which is, I don't know. I'm not going to take the time to figure out why. You can do that if you want, but that's still fairly close. So the return on equity for Caterpillar is much higher. Why? Because than the return on assets. Because of all the debt. Cool. All right, let's continue. Slide 26. Now we're going to take a look at the liquidity ratios. And liquidity, we've already used that term, in the industry means how much cash do you have? Really, that's what it boils down to. But what it means is how well can you meet your debt payments? How well can you service your debts? Because if you can't service your debts, that's a bad thing, right? That's like anybody. You can't make your credit card, house payments, car payments. You get hauled into bankruptcy court, and it's not a good thing. So there are three that we're going to take a look at, but actually one is the exception. It's not actually a ratio, but it's included because some people actually do like to look at that. It's an absolute number. So let's read on slide 26. The financial ratios are concerned with a firm's ability to meet its day-to-day operating expenses and satisfy its short-term obligations as they come due. Okay? Because if you can't make your debt payments, you're in trouble. And the two ratios are the current ratio and the acid test ratio. What a great name that is. And then net working capital, as we're going to see, is not quite a ratio. It's a little bit of an oddball. Well, we'll see it in a minute. Slide 27. First, let's take a look at the current ratio. Very popular statistic. And it's a very simple calculation. You take the current assets within, you know, assets that are going to be with you used within a year, and divide them by the current liabilities. All right, do you have the balance sheet? Do you have the balance sheet in front of you? Take a look at the balance sheet. You see where at the top it says current assets, and then it lists a few current assets, and then says total current assets. That's the one we want. You know, the top current assets is just a label. We're looking at the total current assets. Do you see 38,867? Right. And then do you find the current liabilities? That's down in the middle of the balance sheet. And they have a few things there. 27,877. You see those two numbers? Okay. If you divide the 27,877 current liabilities by the current assets, oh, it was on the top. I'm sorry. I'm confusing you. My apologies. Current assets is on the top, 38,867, divided by current liabilities, 27,877. I get 1.394. Okay? Yahoo gets 1.39, which is close enough. And what is that telling us? Well, anything above 1 is normally considered acceptable. Because if your current assets equal or exceed your current liabilities, you should be able to satisfy your short-term obligations without any problems. Obviously, the greater the number the better, because that means you have a lot more cash lying around. But it gets ridiculous. For a while there, Microsoft, their current ratio was in the 90s, and Apple's was in the, you know, the hundreds, something like that, because they just had so much cash coming out of their ears, they didn't know what to do with it. But in this case, 1.39 for Caterpillar is more than adequate. They can make their debt payments fairly easy. Now, the slide 28 is the net working capital. And this one's not a ratio. It's simply the current ratio in absolute dollar terms. You take the current assets and subtract the current liabilities. In other words, what is left over in terms of dollars? And that's a pretty, you take 38,867 minus 27,877, and it turns out they got about $11 billion extra, right? So you think Caterpillar's going to go out of, no, Caterpillar's not going to go bankrupt anytime soon, folks. They got plenty of assets, current assets on the books. If the current ratio is greater than 1, then that net working capital will be positive because the current assets will be greater than the current liabilities. If the current ratio is less than 1, then the net working capital will be negative, right? So obviously the higher the net working capital, the better, because it means you got lots of cash on the books. However, you get to the point where it's just you got too much cash, and then you don't know what to do with it, and you might as well turn around and give it back to the shareholders because you keep writing windows and keep screwing it up. This statistic is less popular than the current ratio. It really is not a ratio, but it is often discussed when discussing the current ratio and the other liquidity ratios because it shows on an absolute dollar basis how much is left over. Make sense? Okay. Now, slide 29. Now, I love the name here. Like an acid test ratio. Isn't that a great name? Sometimes called the quick ratio. Well, it's a more stringent version of the current ratio. What do we mean by that? Unlike the current ratio, the acid test ratio excludes inventory. Now, why would you want to take out inventory? Well, what happens if your inventory becomes obsolete or undesirable or out of fashion? Or just, you know, it's 6 months later and your computers are two generations behind. Exactly. So this ratio measures the ability of the company to meet its short-term obligations even if its current inventory were to be hit by obsolescence or out-of-fashion undesirability, and hence difficult or maybe impossible to be turned into cash. Now, It depends on the industry. How likely is it that Caterpillar's earth-moving equipment is going to become obsolete? You know, some of them from 30 years ago are still being used, doing the same thing, picking up this dirt over here and moving it over there. So we'll do the current the acid test ratio for Caterpillar, and we'll find that it's actually darn good, because can you find the, there's two ways of calculating it. You can add up the four current assets that do not, in other words, don't exclude inventory, or you can subtract the inventory from the current assets. I find that's a little easier, you know, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it just takes an extra couple of calculations. And we find that the when you subtract out the inventory, you wind up with about 26,662. That's the number I get, 26,662,000,000. So when you divide that by the 27,877 of current liabilities, you get 0.956, which is still pretty darn good, folks, considering that it's unlikely, exactly, it's unlikely that Caterpillar's equipment is going to become obsolete. Okay, great. Those were the liquidity ratios. Let's continue. The next ratios are the activity ratios. And let's read at the bottom. Well, here, let's read first. Financial ratios that are used to measure how well a firm is managing its assets. So the activity ratio measures a firm's ability to convert different accounts within their balance sheets into cash or sales. Companies will try to turn their production to cash or sales as fast as possible because, in general, this will generally lead to higher revenues. In other words, you want to get the stuff out the door. We got to move this stuff, right? Yeah, that's the idea. And so we use ratios from the balance sheet and data from the income statement. So let's get started with the accounts receivable turnover. So let's read. This is a measure of how accounts receivables are managed. What we're going to do is take our top line number, total revenue, remember that one, and divide it by the accounts receivable. And so what are we computing? We are computing how many times the total revenue will pay for the accounts receivable. Does that make any sense? Okay, I think it's easier to do it and then explain it. If you take that total revenue number, which is, 55,184, that's on the income statement, and then you go look at the accounts receivable, that's 18,503, that's a lot of money that's owed to Caterpillar, then you wind up with a accounts receivable turnover of 2.982, about 3. So what that's saying is that every year, Caterpillar will sell 3 times what is owed to them. They're turning over their accounts receivable 3 times a year. Now, this is a very low number when you compare it to other industries. It's a very low number. But for an industry like Caterpillar that sells really big things and has them being shipped all over the world, we'd have to look at their competitors to see if that's, you know, out of the ordinary. Let's read the at the bottom of the slide 31 here. The accounts received turnover indicates the return a company is getting from its investment in accounts receivable. By maintaining accounts receivable, firms are indirectly extending interest-free loans to their clients. In this case, their clients are mostly dealers, right? I mean, people do buy directly from Caterpillar, but the dealers are the ones who mostly sell to the clients, and then the dealers are owing it to Caterpillar. So the dealers are the ones that owe Caterpillar quite a bit of money. A high ratio implies that the company operates either on a cash basis or its extension of credit and collection of accounts receivable is efficient. Well, this is not a high ratio. I've seen high ratios in the 20s where 20 times a year the company will sell the accounts receivable. A low ratio implies that the company should reassess its credit policies in order to ensure the timely collection of imparted credit, not earning interest for the firm. Or that might just be how the industry operates. In the case of Caterpillar, big items. And the poster child for this is the Defense Department. Uncle Sam pays his debts. He just takes a long time to get around doing it. So when you buy an aircraft carrier, well, not you, but we, the United States, buys an aircraft carrier, it takes them a long time to pay for it. But General Dynamics and Boeing and all the defense contractors know they're going to get their money. Don't worry. The next turnover is the inventory turnover. And instead of looking at the accounts receivable, we look at the inventory. So you take the total revenue, that, again, that top line number, 55,184, and divide it by the inventory. In this case, over $12 billion, 12,205, and you get an inventory turnover ratio of about 4.5, which is pretty low, but it's Caterpillar, and they're making big things that have to be sold. The higher the number, the less time an item spends in inventory, and the better the return the company is able to earn from the funds that are tied up in inventory. And just as another time to reiterate, we must compare these ratios against other industry companies' averages. A low turnover implies poor sales and therefore excess inventory, and a high ratio implies strong sales or maybe ineffective inventory buying and maintenance. High inventory levels are not healthy for companies because they represent an investment with a rate of return of essentially zero. And it also opens the company up to trouble in the case of falling prices or obsolete products. So it's a tug of war. If you're a car dealership, you don't want to have a bunch of cars sitting out there on the lot. Why? Because that inventory is costing you money and it's not making you any money. But if you don't have any cars to sell, exactly. And so this is where some companies, most notably computer companies, in the 80s and then into the 90s, Dell was the leader in this, but everyone does it now. They called it just-in-time inventory. Because computers depreciate and become obsolete so quickly, Dell never had any inventory. They would build the product. They would design and create the product, the computer, and then they wouldn't build it until they got an order. That's how they worked. And the rest of the industry said, you know, that's pretty darn smart. And so now that's not the only industry that has done it. Other industries have copied their techniques, but of course, you know, that's computers. The Caterpillar tractors, you know, it's very difficult to do that. But in the Boeing, in the aircraft, yeah, they don't build the plane until they know somebody's going to buy it. So every industry, you have to look at the competitors. And then the last turnover is the total asset turnover. This takes that total revenue and divides it by the total assets. The total asset turnover ratio measures the firm's efficiency at using assets to support the sales and revenue, and the higher the number, the better. Companies with low profit margins tend to have high asset turnovers, where companies with high profit margins tend to have low asset turnovers. For example, supermarkets. You know, they don't make a whole lot of money from every gallon of milk they sell you. But they sell you one every week, or they sell you one every couple of days, depending how many kids you have. And so that's the idea. Okay, those were by the way, I got it because of the large amount of assets that this company has at its disposal, $84.5 billion, you get a total asset turnover about 0.65, which is pretty darn low, and that's because of how many assets is on their books. Exactly. So the last group. Okay, we're ready for the last group. And these are the leverage ratios. Now we're going to use this term leverage throughout the rest of the semester, especially when we get to derivatives and the like and real estate. But let's take a look at it here on slide 34. Leverage ratios are financial ratios that are used to measure the amount of debt being used to support operations and the ability of the firm to service its debt. The ones we'll take a look at are the debt-to-equity ratio, the times interest earned, and the debt total debt to total assets. They use rate data from the balance sheet or the income statement or both. Debt is often referred to as leverage. Now, maybe it's going to make sense, maybe it's not. That's okay. We'll come back to it later on. You'll see it later on. But the idea is that you're using other people's money to make your money. You are using the borrowed money as a lever to increase your earnings. When one firm buys another firm using borrowed money, it is often referred to as a leveraged buyout. You're using somebody else's money to buy the firm. Normally, you'd want to use your own, right? Well, no. We're going to use other people's. And in real estate, this is the lifeblood of real estate investing. Leverage. Because very few people actually buy duplexes and apartment buildings and anything with cash. The first leverage ratio we'll take a look at is the debt-to-equity ratio. It's a measure of a company's financial leverage calculated by dividing the long-term debt by the shareholder's equity. It indicates what proportion of equity and debt the company is using to finance its assets. So you take the long-term debt, which you find on the balance sheet, and the total stockholder's equity, which you find on the balance sheet. Did you find the long-term debt? I got $27,784, right? And total stockholder's equity, $16,746. Is that what you found? So you find a debt-to-equity ratio of 165%, almost 166%. Well, this is really high by company standards, but by companies in this industry, no, it's not that high. A higher debt-to-equity ratio generally means that a company has been aggressive in financing its growth with debt. This can result in lower earnings because you got to pay the additional interest expense, but right now, companies are not paying that much interest because interest rates are so low. Sometimes investors only use interest-bearing long-term debts instead of total liabilities. Now, we say the lower the better, but that's my opinion and many others who are debt-averse. Because, again, if you run into troubles, debt can be a very nasty thing. But other people say, no, no, you don't understand. You want a lot of debt because that means you're using other people's money to leverage your ability to make money. Because you need that capital to get this plant built, to get these products created. Are you with me? Understand the tug of war? It's an eternal tug of war. And a company like Caterpillar has a huge debt-to-equity ratio. But then you look at these technology companies with, you know, what do they have? They have people on computers, which are a dime a dozen, and their debt-to-equity ratios are not quite zero. Some of them are zero. Some companies have very little debt. In fact, some of the companies have been criticized. They've been taking on debt just because interest rates are so low. They're saying, what the hell? Let's go sell some debt because we can get it for really cheap and pay it back very cheaply. That's not going to continue, folks. Interest rates cannot stay this low. And some of you who have taken the Business 121 class might recognize this. We have a debt-to-equity ratio in the financial planning class for us as individuals in the financial planning class for individuals. Same thing, but a whole lot more zeros, right? Slide number 36, times interest earned. Now, this one's interesting, folks. Because this is a ratio that's telling you how many times you've earned the money you need to spend on interest. This is one of the ratios that Benjamin Graham really likes to look at. because if you don't make your interest payments, if you don't pay, then you get hauled off into bankruptcy court. Exactly. So you take the earnings before interest and taxes. Now, that's on the income statement. See if you can find it. Down in the middle somewhere. Did you find it? 5567? Did you? Yeah, okay. And then the interest expense is right below it, 484. Real close. You see it? Okay. And so what this is telling us is that every year, Caterpillar earns their interest 11 and a half times. Because you take 5564 divided by 484, and you get 11 and a half times. So that means once a month, they've earned their annual interest payments. Is Caterpillar in danger of being hauled off the bankruptcy court? No. Yeah, 3 or 4 is usually considered adequate, but Caterpillar is in great shape that way. They're not going into bankruptcy anytime soon. Slide 37, total debt to total assets. This is like the debt-to-equity ratio, but it looks at the total debt and the total assets. It includes both short-term and long-term debt. If it varies substantially from the debt-to-equity ratio, then the company may be relying heavily on short-term debt, and a heavy reliance on short-term debt can denote more risk. It's like trying to finance your company with credit cards. But companies of the Caterpillar size, they don't care. Right now they're paying 0.05 or 0.1% on their short-term debt. So go right ahead, load it up. It's going to be gone in 90 days or 180 days anyway. What do we care? And if we do the total debt to total assets for Caterpillar, we find that it's much less than the debt-to-equity ratio. It's only 80%, about half of what the debt-to-equity ratio is. So, in other words, looking at this one for Caterpillar is a little bit more assuring that, yes, I mean, Caterpillar is a company with huge assets and big debts and is not going anywhere anytime soon. So that, dear students, was our introduction to financial ratios, financial statements, ratio analysis. And as we saw, we've just, exactly, because now we have to look at the competitors for Caterpillar and compare that to the competitors and see where we see anomalies and little red flags and why is that so okay. We understand Caterpillar needed to take on a huge amount of debt because they've got all these back orders and they got to get the stuff out the door, so they got to get from point A to point B. But once they've gotten to point B, that debt is going to be basically dwarfed by how much earnings they are coming through the door. Makes sense? That's just an example. I hope you've enjoyed this. Now, your assignment is to do the same for, I think I picked Qualcomm or Cisco or Cisco, what? Two Ciscos out there, and a couple other companies. You decide. If you want to use a different company, go right ahead, but make sure it's a large cap, a real company. Don't go with any of these small companies or mid-sized companies. Go with something big. It's earning money. Yeah. Okay? All right, great. In our next chapter, we begin the silliness. Just a little bit of silliness. A chapter 8 has even more silliness. Because we've done the heavy lifting for stocks. Chapters 5 and 6 and then 17 for stocks is the heavy lifting with regard to stocks. Now we're going to cover some things that they're important, don't get me wrong. But there's a whole lot of silliness and fluff and ridiculousness that goes on in this industry, folks. In my humble opinion, remember, somebody else's ridiculous might be someone else's bread and butter. So you might get a little bit of I beg to differ, Mr. Pagliano, from some other people who actually use this stuff. So see you in our next chapter, Stock Price Behavior and Market Efficiency. Hang on a minute. See ya.